judges of the United States Court of Appeals, 10-27, Judicial Circuit. Hear ye. All persons having business before the sound of the report are admonished to draw near and give their attention. The court is now set. God save the United States and its honorable court.
Good morning, everybody. May we proceed, please, to case number one. Greason versus Paul O'Neill.
May it please the court, Judge Coffey, Judge Wood, Judge Williams. My name is Camille Conway, and along with my partners, Stephen Pugh, Carol Corns, and our associate John Broderick, represent the plaintiff appellant in this case, Ralph L. Greason. Briefly, our synopsis of the facts are as follows. From 1993 to 1997, Mr. Greason was the special agent in charge of the Chicago field office, the fifth largest field office in the United States. He was well regarded. He was nominated for awards and has continually received outstanding reviews during his tenure. There was even talk of Mr. Greason becoming director of the Secret Service. But, Your Honors, that all changed in February of 1997 when Mr. Greason sought to do something very simple. He wanted an African-American named Isaiah Mapp to be the ASAP, or the second person in charge of the office. When Mr. Greason did that, he had no idea what would transpire. And what transpired, Your Honors, in our own words, was a witch hunt, an investigation, unprecedented, illegal, and we believe racially motivated, took place against Mr. Greason, which resulted in his removal from office. Now, Your Honor, we're before you on the appeal of the entry of summary judgment. And as Your Honors well know, ordinarily in summary judgment, the benefit of the doubt is ordinarily given to the plaintiff. But in this case, Your Honors, it is clear that the district court minimized, ignored, and misconstrued all our evidence, which presented significant evidence which should have caused this case to result in a trial.
Sir Conway, I wonder about two things. One of them is the fact that Mr. Mapp, not too long afterwards, I think about 4 months later, winds up being as the special agent in charge in New Orleans, which would suggest that that no one was worried about Mr. Mapp anyway having a position of responsibility. He was given his own command, if you will. And the other thing I'm wondering about is whether analytically we ought to look at a case where an investigation turns up problems the same way that we should look at a case where there's a lengthy investigation and in the end there's just nothing there, you know, hence a lot of harassment and disruption for a person, but in the final analysis, nothing. Because in the second kind of case, you might say that there should not be discriminatory standards for initiating investigations, but, you know, like we only investigate these people and not these other people. But in this case, the investigation did turn up problems.
Your Honor, regarding your first question, Mr. Mapp, it is true he was named the SAC of New Orleans, but I think there's a couple things Your Honor should note in noting that fact. Number one, there was a conversation between Mr. Flick, who was the ASAC in the Chicago field office, about Mr. Mapp, and with Mr. Griffin, who we contend is one of the chief architects of the scope of the investigation against Mr. Greason. If you recall, Mr. Griffin said that it was not time for Mr. Mapp to move, that he should be kept in Washington. And then, of course, Mr. Greason files all these charges, and lo and behold, after all that happens, Mr. Mapp all of a sudden gets a position in New Orleans. So we think that, although that fact is clear, we think that you should also focus on Mr. Griffin's motivations. But besides saying that statement, and then the subsequent event of him getting a position, leads us to believe, and we contend the court should consider that as a duplicitous motivation by the Secret Service. That's what
okay.
I would say to that.
Okay.
As to your second question, Your Honor, regarding the investigation, obviously, I know the court's, I can anticipate one of the court's concerns are, you know, if there's an investigation, nothing turns up, no harm, no foul. But here, I think you have to look at the fact that it was the manner and mode of investigation. And I would point the court first to the issue of the fact-finding. The fact-finding was something that, the way that was conducted was unprecedented. By the admission of Mr. Vint and others who conducted that, Mr. Vint went down to the Chicago office, and he was only there to investigate a claim by Ms. Whalen. Instead, what did he do? He talked to the office and asked them to solicit complaints, and then he puts 100 flyers in the employees' mailboxes, essentially stirring up the pot, if you will, Your Honor, in order to solicit complaints. And I think that that's one of the things that you have to look at. Also, if you look at the management review, Your Honor, there are clear policy and clear rules and regulations regarding how FES, like Mr. Grayson, are supposed to be investigated.
But, you know, the thing that worries me, to be honest, though, is these are process points, but let's just talk for a moment about the fifth item on the list of concerns, the solicitation of favors, gratuities, and perks, et cetera.
Yes.
That strikes me, anyway, as a rather significant problem. I mean, if a person, if the Attorney General were out there doing that, or if one of us judges were doing such a thing, it would be considered entirely inappropriate. And if, I don't understand Mr. Grayson to be contesting that. I think, reading your brief, you're saying, oh, you know, it's a minor thing, you know, nobody should get all that worried about it, but it sounds to me as though this was not actually a point of whether that's accurate information.
Well, Your Honor, I would say that I have two problems with the Secret Service's reading of why that they viewed that as a problem. First of all, they rely on the hearsay statement of a Jim Kohler, who was not even in law enforcement, who gives his statement about Mr. Grayson being a joke in the law enforcement community. This gentleman has never been a police officer, never been a federal agent, so that's the first point we make about that. Second of all, there was another individual who was also interviewed who said that he had no problem with that, and the Secret Service just ignored that, if you will. And when you combine that with the fact that
it happened, right? I mean, there were the parking places and the health spa and those kinds of things.
Well, as the parking place, Your Honor, I note for the record, we pointed out that Mr. Cho had initially told the investigators that he had solicited a parking space for Mr. Grayson. Then he retracted that statement. So we think there's no evidence on that point. As to the gym passes, I think Mr. Grayson had denied that he had ever directly solicited those passes, although I think some agents indicated that they had done it for him. So I would say this, Your Honor. The thing about what they did with that is, in terms of how they view that, is a situation which we think, as this court has held in Gordon, honest belief has to be conflated with an analysis of reasonableness. And we think that is demonstrated by the evidence in this record that the Secret Service hasn't shown that they would ever terminate someone for that kind of
interest. That was my next question. In terms of the regulations, what are the regulations with respect to these perks? Because, for example, the Oprah ticket, that is something I don't think you're denying.
Well,
what's the Secret Service's policy?
There are, as far as we know, Your Honor, there are no written regulations that govern this issue.
I thought there were written regulations that govern the entire executive branch on these kinds of matters.
We, at least in discovery, we located no documentation about this issue. That's all I can say about that, Your Honor. I'm not aware of any specific regulations on this point.
Did he have to file annual disclosure reports, financial disclosure reports? Such as people in the executive branch file. He was SES, as you said.
Yes, he was. I'm not aware if he was required to do that, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I can't answer that question because I don't know.
Okay.
But I would say this. That the issue of Mr. Grayson taking that along with the other evidence in the case that we produced, for instance, the way the fact finding was done, the way the management review and the absolute unprecedented and what we feel is illegal nature. The point is Mr. Grayson was not treated like anybody else, particularly when you compare his treatment to the other white facts.
So do you know of any other individual in the history of the Secret Service who's had as many as 100 complaints or any more than this man has?
Well, Your Honor, I would say this. First of all, we don't...
No, I don't,
but I don't feel there are 100 complaints here, Your Honor. I think that's a fallacy in the record. If you look at our PX65, there were about, I would say, fairly 40 or 50 complaints, and they ranged in the five areas that they reviewed Mr. Grayson on. And I think what we've done is shown to the court that those reasons that they gave for his removal were not honestly believed. I can see that my light is on. I would reserve the time
for
rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
May it please the court, counsel. What was the Secret Service supposed to do? I mean, really, you know, there are at least 100 complaints about women being sexually harassed by Mr. Grayson, being discriminated by Mr. Grayson. Agents complained that if they complained about their performance reviews, he would retaliate against them.
But Mr. Lindland, here's my problem. initially, this begins with just one complaint about the woman who's reprimanded in public, and then she raises the second complaint that she was retaliated against, I guess, by being sent off to the Gary office. If, hypothetically, the Secret Service had a policy that African-American SAICs get the full-blown, complete, leave-no-stone-unturned investigation based on two complaints, and Caucasian SAICs just get one person to come out, have a chat with the complaining party, close the file, and we're done with it, that's a problem. That's a discriminatory policy about initiating investigations. Can you tell me why that's not what happened here?
Well, they don't. I mean, they clearly don't. In fact, in this case, when Ms. Whalen first filed her first complaint about being dressed down in front of her co-employees, they resolved that over the phone. You know, somebody from Washington just called Mr. Grayson. They resolved it over the phone. It wasn't until she complained about being retaliated against. Then that's where the policy of the Secret Service kicks in. If the complaint is about retaliation, and clearly here's a woman that's complaining about a male supervisor retaliating against her, that's when they send out fact finders. And in this case, one of the fact finders happened to be the director of this newly created Office of Diversity in the Workplace.
Mr. I mean, Vinge, right.
Exactly. They're trying to, you know, go out there while he's out there. And it was a separate thing. He was out there first as a fact finder, and the director of the Secret Service said, you know, Mr. Vint, while you're out there, introduce the office to this new Diversity in the Workplace office.
But Mr. Grayson says that's not really what he was instructed to do. Do we have like a cognizable conflict about the purpose of Mr. Vint's sort of broad brush approach when he got out to the Chicago field office?
It's Mr. Grayson's theory about why he went out there. The fact is, Director Bowron said in his deposition, this is why I want him to go out there and have this open office meeting. In fact, a Director Bowron did the exact same thing with one of the SACs that Mr. Grayson tried to compare himself with.
And in that situation with the other SAC, where there are slips put in the mailbox of each of the agents soliciting complaints about the SAC?
That was never developed in the record. They never took the deposition of the SAC in that office and never asked Mr. Bowron about that.
Are the flyers in the record?
No.
So we don't know what they actually said?
No, but according to Mr. Vint, his testimony, he basically went out there and I believe he put up a few flyers near the mailboxes and sort of like instructed some of the people during the meeting and said, look, here's what our office is about. If you have a concern, you can call us. We're staying at a hotel. Give us a call. And what happened after that is amazing. People started calling and saying, I want to meet you at night in your hotel room because I don't want Grayson to know because he'll retaliate against me.
But trying to get at whether we know whether the flyers just said, we're here to listen to whatever you want to tell us, you know, here's a phone number or whatever, or whether they said something more pointed, you know, if you've got complaints about your supervisors or if you've got complaints, you know, how specific were these things?
He told them at the meeting if they had concerns or questions about this new Office of Diversity that they could call. And basically people voluntarily called and said, here's what's going on here.
So you're saying there was no solicitation of complaints by him?
That's correct.
And that each agent's mailbox was not stuffed with a flyer?
That's the only evidence about that is from Mr. Grayson's allegation. There's no other evidence about that. I mean, the fact of the matter is, the Secret Service is one of the most prestigious federal law enforcement agencies. These are the agents that are out there protecting the president. They're supposed to jump in front of a bullet. And here we have Mr. Grayson sending these agents out to, you know, solicit for Oprah passes and, you know, hotel rooms and health club passes and all these things.
What's the Secret Service's policy with regard to that, to those kinds of solicitations?
There are regulations about that, but they're not in the record. I mean, obviously, as with most federal agencies, especially the head of a major office, is not supposed to be out there in the business community trying to get free things and sending his agents out. In fact, one agent said he felt like a pimp out there. That is obviously an inappropriate way to treat your agents and employees.
But in the treatment of Grayson, did he receive anything in writing with regard to violating Fed policy, since nothing is in the record, I assume nothing was given to him specifically that he violated a particular regulation.
In his performance evaluation, they did discuss that.
They discussed it, but did they cite to any regulation?
I would have to look at the evaluation.
I didn't see one. That's why I'm asking.
Okay. Right after that, obviously, all these complaints came in. What was the Secret Service supposed to do? You know, they probably could have fired him on the spot, but they didn't. That's not the service's way. Instead, they detailed him out to Washington so they could at least finish the investigation without having the employees be intimidated by Mr. Grayson, as he had done during the fact-finding. And they finished the investigation. During his detail, he was given a car. He was given an office. He kept his FDS rank and his benefits and his pay. They flew him home regularly on the government's nickel to see his family. And they finished the investigation and sat him down and said, look, we have over 100 complaints about you. We have two options. You can go through administrative discipline, and we'll get to the bottom of all these complaints then and, you know, find out whether you really did call yourself Big Dick Daddy from Cincinnati and whether you really did put your hands all over your female employees and whether you really did, you know, try to intimidate an agent into not talking to the investigators, or you can retire.
What about Mr. Conway's argument that Mr. Grayson had had a spectacular career with the service?
That's true. He did, obviously, before these complaints came out. In fact, that's the irony of his case. He's claiming that this racist Secret Service, you know, is this horrible, awful organization, yet they're the same service that promoted him to the top spot in one of the largest field offices in the country. And even more, he's claiming that Richard Griffin, the deputy director at the time, and Director Bowron are the instigators of all this racial activity, yet those are the very people who recommended Mr. Grayson for its highest award, the Presidential Rank Award. Now, of course, that was all before these complaints came up. But the fact is, you know, they obviously are not trying to get rid of him because of his race. They didn't have to give him the highest award. They didn't have to promote him to, the, you know, like one of the largest field offices in the country. The fact is, this case, Ralph Grayson's complaint is nothing more than a misguided attempt to blame someone else for what is so painfully clear in the record, and that is Ralph Grayson destroyed his career at the Secret Service by abusing his authority as a special agent in charge. He did that by being a sexual harasser, a sexual discriminator, a retaliator, an intimidator, and by driving the morale of his employees down just so he could get a pat on the back for having high arrest statistics. And Mr. Grayson did that by himself. Unless this panel has any further questions, we ask that you affirm the decision of the district court.
Thank you, counsel. I'd just like to address a few points Mr. Lemon made, Your Honors. First of all, there is no evidence in the record that the Secret Service ever showed Mr. Grayson any kind of document telling him what his obligations or duties was in terms of whether or not the issue of passes and perks. You know, if the Secret Service was seeking to get remove Mr. Grayson from office on this, certainly they could have showed him some kind of document saying you're aware of this. But they never produced those documents in discovery, and we asked for a variety of documents with regard to the issues of the disciplinary policies of the Secret Service, and we never got those. I would say this. Mr. Lindland talked about the fact that the fact finders came down and that it was this innocuous thing. But the problem with that is not only did they solicit, and there's testimony not only from Mr. Grayson, but from Mr. Flick about these hundreds of flyers in the mailbox. But additionally, Ms. Berry, who did not work for the executive director's office, was there also taking these solicited complaints, if you will, from people in the office. And she had no duties, no obligations, and no rights under the rubric of the executive director for the diversity. So you have to ask yourself, why was that being done that way? We contend, we think there's evidence in the record that should get us to a trial, that is motivation by Mr. Griffin regarding getting rid of Mr. Grayson because of his longstanding bias against Mr. Grayson. And unfortunately for Mr. Grayson, other individuals also closed ranks against him. We would ask, Your Honors, that we be given a jury trial in this case for the reasons stated in our briefs. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We will take the case under advisement.